ॐ नमो अग्निद्रासुतस्ते मथुरानुग्रहाद् उत्पथिकेनैव संहनना वलोपेता पित्रा विभक्तात्मकुतोयनामानि यथावागौ जाम्बुद्वीपवर्षाणि भूभूषुः. So, you can repeat. Agnidrasuddha. The sons of Maharaj Agnidra. They. Matahu. Of the mother. Anugrahat. By the mercy or by drinking the breast milk. Utpatthikena, naturally, eva, certainly, samhanana, well-built body, bala, strength, upetaha, obtained, pitra, by the father, vivaktaha, divided. Atmatuya, following their own. Namani, possessing names. Yathabhagam, divided properly. Jambudvipavarshani, different parts of Jambudvipa. Probably Asia and Europe combined together. Bubujuhu ruled. Translation, because of drinking the breast milk of their mother, the nine sons of Agnidra naturally had strong, well-built bodies. Their father gave them each a kingdom in a different part of Jambudvipa. The kingdoms were named according to the names of the sons. Thus the sons of Agnidra rule the kingdoms they received from their father. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So the Acharyas specifically mention that in this verse the words Mathu Anugrahat, by the mercy of their mother, refer to the breast milk of their mother. In India it is a common belief that if a baby is fed his mother's milk for at least 6 months, his body will be very strong. Besides that, it is mentioned herein that all the sons of Agnidra were endowed with the nature of their mother. Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter, text 40, also declares, as Trishu Dushtash Uvarn Varshneya Jayate Varna Sankara, where women are polluted, Varna Sankara, unqualified children are generated. And when the Varna Sankara population increases, the entire world becomes hellish. Therefore, according to Manasamhita, a woman needs a great deal of protection in order to remain pure and chaste so that her children can be fully engaged for the benefit of human society. So, Agnidra Sutaste Maturanugrahad Otpattikenaiva samhanana balopeta pitra vivakta matuya namani yata bhagam jamadvipa varshani bhubhujahu. So Om Ganata Mirandasha Ganjana Shlakya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there's a lot of interesting points here. First of all, I'm going to talk about the mother breastfeeding the child. And Prabhupada said this is something that's talked about in India. And actually, I used to work with cows. Everybody know what a cow is? No? All right. That's that animal that gives milk. Anyway, that's our mother. So many years ago, we had a cow, and then I learned many things about the cow and how to deliver calves and everything like that. So I was a midwife for a cow. So anyway, I don't know if you know what that means, but anyway. But anyway, so what I learned is that is the calf is supposed to drink the milk from the cow, and actually the initial milk gives the calf all its immunity for the rest of its life, which is really interesting. And nowadays, of course, they take the calf away from the dairies and the slaughterhouses. They take the calf away from the mother immediately, practically immediately after the calf is born, and then feed the calf so many things so it doesn't even digest it, and then sell the calf for veal. You've heard of veal before? I don't know what the word is in your language. What? Tiritina. Okay. So, and they confine the calf to this little tiny, like a cage practically. It can't even move, and it's just getting sick, passing stool, living a miserable life, and then a few days later they kill it. And it's supposed to be a delicacy. You know, the white veal. A great delicacy, especially here in Europe. It's considered a great, in Germany. So it's considered a great delicacy. So the point I'm making is that it's natural for the calf to drink the milk from the mother. And even when the people in the Vedic system are milking the cow, first they let the calf drink the milk, and then when the calf has had the proper quota, because the calf will actually keep drinking too much. If you let the calf actually drink from the mother cow, the calf will actually get sick because it'll drink too much milk, which indicates that the cow is actually supposed to give milk for human beings, isn't it? If the cow is giving too much milk, more than the calf can probably or practically digest, that means the milk is meant for someone else, and that milk is meant for human beings. Of course, we are talking about milk that is produced from dairies or people who are taking care of their cows that are protecting the cows, not people who are exploiting the cows. That's another issue. So that also applies to human beings, that if a human being is properly taken care of by his mother, then all sorts of good things occur. First of all, he develops immunity, doesn't get sick so much. That's why nowadays you see people getting sick a lot. Because basically, it's something like the calf going away from his mother right after he was born. In the same way, in modern society, they take the baby away from the mother. Not they take, the mother gives, puts the baby in daycare or something after a few days. And she goes to work. And they give the baby, instead of the mother's milk, they give the baby formula. Instant infant formula. And interestingly enough, that formula that they give the baby has a lot of sugar in it. So later on they can exploit the poor kid when he grows old so he's addicted to eating sugar. And then later on he gets cancer, heart disease, and all these nice things that occur. So you see the Vedic system is perfect. The mother takes care of the child, breastfeeds the child gets healthy, and, whoops. A little too loud for me. And then not only that, but the son, that means the son is the male child, in case you didn't know that, takes after the mother. The daughter takes after the father and the son takes after the mother. So the mother's place is very, very important. Another thing Prabhupada said about the mother taking care of the son and breastfeeding the son for a period of time, was 6 months mentioned here, is that the boy will not be experiencing so much lust when he gets older. You know, there's very interesting things like that. You know, the natural systems are very, very good, and as far as raising the children, as far as growing the food, as far as living on a farm. I mean, all these things are actually very good for the health, for the mental stability. And nowadays, even because of these physiological points, because the children are not raised properly. We're not even talking about genetics yet. We're not even talking about other things in society like a woman's chastity, which Prabhupada deals with here in the purport, which we'll get to in a few seconds. Then society is hellish because people are getting sick more often, people have mental problems, you know, they weren't taking care of their mother, they don't feel any security. Boys and girls, they're exploited by the parents, you know, the father is abusing them, the mother is abusing them. I mean, they're neglected. Just like I've told the story before here, that I was speaking to one of my disciples in the United States and asking her, she babysits for a living, to make a living, to make money, and ask her if she has any problem getting customers, and she says no. She has to fight them off, practically speaking, because they just want to dump their kids right away. And so it's a good business to be in, and all you brahmacharis should get in that business, babysitting. I mean, you don't have to go to the university or study. I'm not just joking about that, of course. You know, if we opened up a daycare center here, you could actually support the whole temple. I'm not suggesting that.
Thank you.
I'm not suggesting that. And that it really creates a social dysfunction. Just like, or let's give the example of Romania. Was it Romania or Czechoslovakia, one of the two countries? During the communist years, what they did is they took the children away from the parents so the parents could, the mother could be part of the workforce immediately, and so they could train the children up to be good communists. And so they took the little babies away from the mothers and just put them in the cribs. Everyone knows what a crib is. A crib is a little bed for a baby. And instead of even giving them bottles, you know, one thing is, you know, bottles are a substitute for the mother, not a very good substitute. They had like a tube running the length of the whole room with other tubes coming down, and the babies could suck on those other tubes. It's like a factory for babies. Something almost like that Matrix film, you know, where everybody connected, you know, and they're floating or whatever. Everyone seen that Matrix film? I think most of you have. It was something like that. And guess what? You know, the kids that grew up were so dysfunctional. It's incredible. So dysfunctional that practically that whole generation was ruined. So, in other words, children do require that. If any people are thinking of getting married, it's a very serious thing, or having children is a very serious thing, and they should be ready to dedicate their lives to taking care of the children. Anyway, that's the first topic. The second topic here is about the chastity of women. And I'm going to broaden that topic to not only include women, but also men, and then also the relationship between guru and disciple. But let's start with the women thing. In the Vedic system, it's understood that when a woman is chaste, of course, let's describe what chaste is, because some of you may not understand that word. Chaste means basically someone who is loyal. Let's give that a synonym. Loyal, okay? And when the opposite of chastity is unchastity, that means when someone is disloyal. So when a woman is loyal to, and this applies to men too, but let's start with the women because that's what Prabhupada's talking about, loyal to, in the Vedic system, the parents or the father, the son, the husband, she becomes very, very powerful. So powerful that nobody can defeat her, not even a kshatriya, not even the demigods. And I'll tell several stories about that. Once upon a time, there was one lady who was extremely chaste, and her husband, this is from the Markandeya Purana, her husband had leprosy. So one day, by accident, her husband touched the sage Markandeya Rishi. And Markandeya Rishi, he got very angry. And he cursed her husband to die. By the time the sun rose the next morning. So, all right, so that's a pretty heavy curse. And the husband wasn't exactly a pure devotee and saying, Hari Bol, now I have a chance to remember Krishna and go back to home, back to God. He was in anxiety about the whole thing. And his wife, being so chaste to him, even though, you know, he's a rather low-class person, there's more details in the Markandeya Purana about this, but he was a rather low-class person, but she was loyal. Loyalty, oh, another point is, loyalty doesn't mean you have to do everything the person says. That's a common misunderstanding. That if you're loyal to someone, unless they're a pure devotee, that doesn't mean, you know, if they say do something crazy, you do something. But you're just loyal to them. Just like I guess I'm loyal to my mother. That's why I joined the Hare Krishna movement, to please her. So, yeah, because I'm doing the best thing for my mother. She's getting liberated. She doesn't appreciate it, but she's getting liberated. She'll get a chance to see Krishna, take part in devotional service. So my loyalty to her is expressed by not listening to her instructions. So we shouldn't confuse chastity, loyalty, with just blind obedience. That's the point I'm making. Unless someone's a pure devotee. So anyway, getting back to the point. So she was loyal to her husband, so she stopped the rising of the sun. The poor sun was just stopped there in his tracks. And there was no mourning. Of course, I like that he had a vacation. There's a whole story from the Ramayana that when the sun had a vacation, his chariot driver, you know, his pilot, so to speak, put in modern terms, like in Star Wars as a pilot. So anyway, so his pilot, Aruna, took a vacation. And as a result of that vacation, several things happened. Several things that are interesting. Sugriva was born and Bali was born in the Ramayana story. I'm not going to tell those details because they're a little tough for you all to understand. But anyway, there was a vacation. So the sun wasn't going to rise. So therefore, the demigods, they went to this lady and said, please let the sun rise, my dear lady. And she said, only on the condition that my husband can live. And they had a little conference, you know, GBC conference. And they said, you know, we got a problem here. They called for a mediator. And the resolution was that the sun would rise and her husband would live. And the curse was nullified. Interesting, isn't it? So all the demigods are defeated by this lady. See, ladies can become very powerful. Scary. One has to be very careful. Actually, one story I have myself, I don't know if I should tell it. One time, you know, I didn't really insult a chaste lady, but I made a joke. She had a back problem, so I just, like, made a joke. I said, oh, your back problem. And then I had a back problem for the next 2 months after that. I said, all right, I'm scared of you. So one has to be very, very careful in that regard. That's how powerful the ladies can become. Another story is the famous story of Savitri and Satyavan. You heard that story before? No. Okay, interesting story. So, all right, so there was this girl, Savitri. She was quite attractive. And what happened is that she couldn't find a husband. She looked too good. I mean, her father couldn't find a husband because I guess people were afraid of her because she was too attractive. You know, they were afraid. You know, they couldn't keep their minds under control or something. So the father said to her, you got to find your own husband. So she went out and she was accompanied by the kings and everything like the soldiers and horses and elephants and everything. And she found this young man, his name was Satyavan. So she went back to her father and said, Dad, I finally found a husband. And the father said, that sounds nice. And what's your husband like? Well, his name is Satyavan. He's from a king's family. His parents are blind, so they actually got kicked out of the kingdom, and he's living in the forest with his parents, but he's really high class. And the father says, sounds good. And at the same time, Narada Muni was there. And Narada Muni said, he's nice, but it's a bad idea. A really bad idea. And Savitri's father said, why is it a bad idea? You know, he's nice. And Narada Muni said, why? Because he's supposed to die 1 year from today. So the father of Savitri said, better to forget about this marriage. But she had already given her loyalty to Satyavan. And so what happened is that she said, I'm marrying him anyway. And the father said, all right, you know what's going to happen. You're going to be a widow after a year. So she goes to live with Satyavan and his parents in the forest. And she's basically counting down the days until her husband's going to die. So a few days before her husband's going to die, she starts fasting, praying, and, you know, just like really dedicated to her husband. And, the day her husband's supposed to die, she says to her in-laws, that means her mother-in-law or father-in-law, I want to go to the forest with him when he chops wood today, because she wants to keep an eye on him the whole day. Okay, so she goes to the forest with him, he's chopping wood, and all of a sudden he has a heart attack, and he dies. And she's holding his head on her lap, and because of her great chastity, she sees someone coming to take the soul away. And it happens to be our friend, Yamaraj. And Yamaraj has the ropes of Varuna, that's how he yanks the soul out of the body. And the soul, when it comes out of the body, is small, you know, 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. It's not that he comes out of the body, you know, just like big. And so a little tiny spark, you know, very bright, because the soul is like 10,000 times as bright as the sun, too. Right now your soul is not showing it because it's covered by so much garbage. I was going to use a different word, but that wasn't so nice. But anyway, it's covered by so much, anyway, garbage that you can't even see the light. And people even said sometimes the Prabhupada was glowing because his soul was not covered. Whereas our soul is just like dark. Even sometimes you look at people and they're dark. Even in the middle of the day, it's just like, huh? I can't see you. Because you're so dark. And then you see, you know, like really dark. I'm not talking about complexion. I'm talking about aura around the body. So Yamaraj comes, takes the soul out of the body. And she sees it. And she starts to follow Yamaraj. And Yamaraj basically says, go back, lady. And of course, it's understood that generally Yamaraj doesn't come. He sends his dutas, his Yamadutas. But because of her chastity, it was directly Yamaraj. That's the first point. Anyway, so they walked 7 steps. And when you walk 7 steps with someone, that makes them your friend eternally, just to warn you. That's why the marriage, that's one of the Vedic marriages, that's one of the things. You have these just circles of rice powder. Anyone seen a Vedic marriage here? You know, 7 steps. This step. Uh-oh, I'm not going any further. So anyways, so 7 steps. So she says, I walked 7 steps. We're supposed to be friends. And he says, go back, lady. She says, well, let's have a little discussion. So there's a discussion. She pleases Yamaraj by her answers. And Yamaraj says, all right, lady, ask for a benediction. But you can't have your husband back. No way, Jose. Oh, sorry. No way you can have your husband back. And she says, all right, I just want my father, because her father couldn't have a son. So she said, I want my father to have a son. He just had a daughter. And Yamaraj said, okay, benediction, I can take care of that one. No problem. No problem. So they keep walking. And he says, you know, lady, it's a little bit too much, you know. You better go back to where you came from. Your husband's dead, you know. That's it. And they have a discussion. Yamaraj gets pleased again. And he says, would you like another benediction? But you can't have your husband back. And she says, well, I want my father-in-law to recover his sight because he was blind. He got kicked out of the kingdom because he was blind. And Yamaraj says, okay, got it. You can do that. Now go back. He says, well, it's such an interesting discussion. I like walking with you, Yamaraj. So anyway, they keep walking. And finally, you know, he says, all right, you got another benediction, but you can't have your husband back. She said, I want my father to recover his kingdom. Okay, you got that. And then walking. And finally he says, all right, one last benediction. You can't have your husband back. Just then you have to go. And she says, okay, I agree with that. And she says, I just want the benediction. I'm going to have 100 sons from my husband, Satyavan. And Yamaraj is so completely fried out by this time. You know, this lady keeps following. He's never experienced this before. And so he doesn't think straight. You know, when someone keeps bothering you, you know, somehow or other your mind doesn't work the same way it usually works. And he says, all right, you can have 100 sons with your husband, but you can't have your husband back. You know, go back. And she says, well, guess what? The only way to have 100 sons with my husband is you give him back to me. And he thinks a second, oh my God, I got defeated by this lady. So she takes her husband back. Her father-in-law gets back his kingdom. Her father gets his son. And they live happily ever after. Nice story, isn't it? That's a story of a chase. I'll tell you another story. There's so many stories in the Vedic literatures, and actually, some of them are quite humorous. There's a story of Chaivana Muni and Sukanya. So once upon a time, there was this sage Chaivana Muni. He was quite old and wrinkly. Not an attractive young man. So basically, Sukanya, this is a young girl, Sukanya. Kanya means like unmarried girl, and Su means good. So Sukanya was a princess, and her father's name was Sarayati. These are all stories from Bhagavatam. And so Sukanya was accompanying her father. Her father was visiting the ashram of Chaivana Muni. Chaivana Muni was engaged in meditation. He was under the earth, you know, and looking out through this little hole in the ground, like this. So what happened is Sukanya was just a girl, and she was playing, and she took a piece of grass and saw the eyes in the little hole. She thought it was just lights, and she poked at it. And then, of course, what he was doing looking out is he was looking at Sukanya. Prabhupada explains later on. He was going, what a nice little girl. Anyway, because she had committed an offense by poking him in the eye, all the kings, men, soldiers, horses, and everything got, how do you explain, constipation. It means they couldn't digest food, basically. Stories in the Bhagavatam, don't blame me if it's too little. It's not proper or something. But so anyway, so they all had constipation. They couldn't move, and they were getting sick. And the king understood some offense had been made, and then he found out from talking to the sage that his daughter had committed an offense. So what he did is he said to his daughter, now you got to marry the sage. And here he is, you know, you're like, I don't know how old he was, but he really looked bad. Really looked bad. And then she was real young. And so also another thing, when you get old, you get a little cranky too. You know what cranky means? Your temper gets really bad. Yeah, like that. That's why you got to be careful about me. Yeah, Ananta said, you know, you got a real bad temper, Maharaj. No, he never said that. I'm just joking. He said, you're always laughing at everything. That's a way to deal with it. So, no, you actually said I'm always happy. The reason I'm always happy is I always go to Mangalarti. That's the secret. You understand? No matter what, Mangalarti and see the deities. A good sadhana is the key to happy life. So, getting back to the story. So she gets married to him. They have this fire sacrifice. I guess someone had to hold him still during the fire sacrifice because he was so old, you know, just like he would fall into the fire along with the ghee. I mean, he was really old. And then so she basically had to be his wife. And then, you know, that's a real austerity. So she was serving very, very, very nicely. And he was very pleased with her. So then he called for the Ashvini. He thought he'd give her a gift, you know, an anniversary gift. So the Ashvini Kumaras came. They're the doctors in the heavenly planets. And they're not doctors like nowadays. They're interested in making money, the pharmaceutical industry and everything like that. These are good doctors. So they came, and he said to him, I got a deal for you, my dear Ashwini Kumaras. I will let you drink Soma Ras. Soma Ras is like the beer of the heavenly planets. Not exactly beer. I mean, it's nice, but it's what they drink there, just to get high. So anyway, so I'll let you drink Soma Ras, even though normally you're not considered demigods. You can't drink it if you give me youth. So what they did is the Ashwini Kumar said, "Yeah, good idea." So they all marched into this lake that I guess the Fountain of Youth. There was this. This is not part of the story, but anyway, many years ago there was this explorer named Vasco da Gama from Portugal, and he went to America to look for the Fountain of Youth, which he thought he would find in Florida. There's this whole concept, you know. There was actually a fountain there you could bathe in and become young again. He never found it. And now Florida is a retirement community for old people. So getting back to the story. Sorry for all the humor. Getting back to the story, they all went into this lake, and they all came out young, and practically Sukanya couldn't tell which one was her husband. And then she prayed, Ashwini Kumaras, please reveal which one is my husband. They revealed, this is your husband. And then she had a young husband as a result of her chastity. That doesn't mean that if a lady marries an old man, he'll become young again. But so Sukanya and Saivana Muni lived happily ever after. And then what happened is, this just to end the story, was that Saivana Muni gave the Soma Ras to the Ashwini Kumaras, and Indra became so angry, he fired a thunderbolt at them. And Saivana Muni was so powerful because of the chastity of his wife, he was able to freeze the hand of Indra. You know, Indra was getting ready, like that, and all of a sudden his hand went light. He got paralyzed. Wow, what a story. That story is in the Bhagavatam. You can read, if you read the Bhagavatam, you'll hear all these stories in depth. And then, I mean, other stories. Let's see how much time we have. We still have some time. Of course, there's a story of Gandhari, who is so chaste to her husband, Dhritarashtra, that she was even able to curse Krishna. You know that story? At the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, she was so upset that her sons had been killed, and she blamed Krishna for the whole thing. She said, Krishna, because of this fratricidal war, I curse you that your family will endure the same thing in 30-something years from now, and they will kill each other. And therefore, you have this whole story of the Moksha Lila in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna's family, they got cursed because of something Samba did. They got cursed and they fought each other. They got drunk on rice wine, and they fought each other, beat each other with these sticks that were like iron clubs. Anyway, there's a whole story about that. And they killed each other. And she cursed Krishna. And actually, that was Krishna's plan. I'm not saying that she was more powerful than Krishna, but Krishna wanted that to happen to show the power of her devotion and loyalty. And also, Krishna wanted his family an excuse to take his family away because he was leaving the planet. He didn't want them to stay on the planet. So, just one other story. And then another story, of course, is Draupadi, who was so chaste in her devotion to Krishna and to her husbands that she was able to be saved by Krishna many, many times. That the unlimited sari, so many things occurred. And when they were in the forest, Krishna saved them. When Durvasa Muni came, he wanted prasadam, and there wasn't any prasadam left. And Krishna ate a little drop, and then Durvasa Muni and his associates became satisfied. So anyway, there are a lot of stories about this chastity or loyalty. So what does this mean for us? First of all, it doesn't mean that one should blindly follow, or a wife should blindly follow the husband, or you should blindly follow your parents. There's this other story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where this lady, Sati, was married to a man who committed an offense against Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was regularly taking prasadam in the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sati was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's daughter, and Amoga was the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, or Sati's husband. So what happened is one time Lord Chaitanya was taking prasadam, and Amoga was looking in and saw that Lord Chaitanya was eating more than a normal person would eat, which he can do because he's God. And he said, "This sannyasi is eating something like 10 times more." And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya got so angry with him that he chased after him with a stick to beat him. And he said, and his wife said, that Sati is no longer married to him. She's a widow, basically, because he has committed an offense. In other words, if someone has fallen, you don't have to associate with them. You don't have to listen to them if someone is in a fallen condition. Of course, you remain loyal by praying for them. Does everyone understand the principle of loyalty? Loyalty is not blind following. Loyalty is being the person's well-wisher and remaining loyal to them. You know, loyal, for lack of a better word. Devoted to that particular individual. So, of course, in the case of dealing with pure devotees, loyalty means we also listen to them, but not blind following either. Prabhupada condemned, in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. And one time Prabhupada showed, through a humorous encounter with the devotees, how blind following is actually stupid, even in regard to a pure devotee. One day the devotees were on a morning walk in Los Angeles, and as they were walking, Prabhupada was, of course, preaching to them. And they saw a very fancy car. And Prabhupada looked at the fancy car and he said, in the future, our movement will be so wealthy and prominent, we'll have many fancy cars like this. And the devotees, of course, everything Prabhupada said, they always said, "Jai." You know, "Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada." You know, without even thinking what he was saying, or whether he was testing them. So then they came across, you know, this big fancy building. Prabhupada said, "In the future we'll have many, many big buildings in our movement." "Every Jai Prabhupada, what do you go? Prabhupada, you're so wonderful." And then they come across this man walking, this big German shepherd. And Prabhupada, German shepherd, you know what that is, a dog. And Prabhupada said, "In the future we will have many, many big dogs like this in our movement." And the devotees went, "Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, how wonderful." And Prabhupada said, "You're so foolish. Everything I say, you'll say Jai to." So Prabhupada did not want, like, blind following. I mean, of course, we have full faith in Prabhupada. But at the same time, one has a right to ask Prabhupada what he meant by something. There was one time, another example is that one time a devotee came to Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, I'd really like to be a sannyasi, take sannyas." And Prabhupada said, "You should get married." He was testing him to see his determination. You know, sometimes there's that test. And so the next day he comes to Prabhupada with his fiancée. And obviously he didn't pass the test. So wasn't ready for sannyas at that particular juncture. So blind following is not recommended, although one should always be devoted and chaste. And if one is devoted, referring to this example of chastity in relationship to the woman who becomes so powerful, if one is devoted to the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada and one's spiritual master, one gets great power, just like the chaste lady. Like Prabhupada, I mean, what was the source of Prabhupada's power? I know it was Krishna. But the source of Prabhupada's power, essentially, and all of his God brothers, they were actually great devotees, many pure devotees like that. We're not denying that. Prabhupada said that, and they're all going back to Godhead. Prabhupada said that too. But the source of Prabhupada's power and to accomplish the impossible was that he took the words of his spiritual master as his life and soul. Even though those words, I mean, there was no way, like, applying ordinary common sense, it would have worked. Like Prabhupada going to the West with no money, or Prabhupada, you know, his godbrothers discouraged him. But Prabhupada had full faith. Now, Prabhupada, even there's some story that Prabhupada was talking about how Lord Chaitanya, his godbrothers of many Vaishnavas, didn't really understand or accept when Lord Chaitanya said, in every town and village his name will be preached. They were thinking, oh, this is just a poetic statement. And when Prabhupada was talking about it, Prabhupada said it will happen. And then someone asked him, who will do that? And Prabhupada said, any fool, you know, some. And Prabhupada was being very humble because it was him. Because Prabhupada had that faith in the order of the spiritual master, which contains within it the success potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prabhupada was able to do the impossible. And when Prabhupada instilled that faith in the devotees, it was like when Prabhupada wanted 17 books edited, printed, you know, proofread, everything in 2 months. And when Prabhupada told us impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary, and Prabhupada chastised us for thinking it was impossible, and the devotees were able to do this because we had faith. And, you know, even the Bible says faith can move mountains, right? So that's really the key, that faith, devotion, chastity. And, of course, in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in relationship to the spiritual master, that's also mentioned in the story of, Malaya Dwaja, where the devoted wife, the husband dies, and the devoted wife sees her old friend who happens to be the super soul. So Prabhupada says in that regard that one who carries out the mission of the spiritual master, when the spiritual master disappears, the super soul appears before one. He comes in contact with the super soul. So anyway, these are some things we can learn. So all of us are meant to apply this principle of loyalty. It doesn't just apply to women, and it just doesn't apply to a marriage situation. It applies actually in every aspect of our lives, in relationship to the guru, in relationship, even in relationship to each other, like two brahmacharis. Friendship, you know, loyalty, isn't it? This is what makes it a community, when we're loyal to each other. Like the spiritual master loyal to the disciples and to friends and ladies. Just like we talked to some of the ladies the other day who have this nice sangha, and they meet, they have this 16 rounds without moving sangha in the morning. It's nice, isn't it? And they sit together and they chant, and then one gets sick, yeah, they help the other one. So our society should be based on this chastity or loyalty to each other, not just the spiritual master, not just Krishna, but to each other and to the order of the spiritual master. And in this way, we can all become very powerful and able to spread Krishna consciousness, as we see in Prabhupada's example. So any questions or comments? Questions, comments, issues, arguments, problems? I hope I pronounced everything properly today. Got to watch my pronunciation. There's a little influence of different cultures. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Wife of the Brahmin, wife of the king, wife of the spiritual master. Yeah. The seven mothers. Yeah. Yeah.
Between this aspect of mother-father figure,
yeah,
authority like a spiritual master, and all the
Yeah. Yeah.
With the children. And I think this loyalty, when this will be really spread, this what was in Srimad Bhagavatam in those 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
This mentality will spread. I mean, in the person's heart, this will disappear. This, because they will really see the good in mother, father,
mm-hmm.
also cows, because cow is a mother, and they explore the mother who weeps, who cries.
Mm-hmm.
You can see when I see video like how mother cries, how cow cries, because she knows that she will be dead. And this is how persons will change the mentality, that they will see the soul in the heart of cow, not cow like, oh, this is an object of my identification. This mothers we need to respect, really.
Yeah.
They get give us everything. We can be now here. Prabhupada came here and also Mother gave us the chance that we can be here now.
Yes. Yeah, that's the secret to having a good society, respecting mothers of society. Very, very good. And yeah, anyway, it's a good point. I don't have any arguments with that one. So anyone else have any questions? Any of the fathers here? Men? Yeah.
What is this loyalty?
Loyalty means don't break a relationship. Always be the well-wisher and work for the welfare of someone else. That's what loyalty means. It doesn't mean you have to follow. I mean, if someone is a spiritual authority, that's a different thing. But, you know, one has to really be intelligent and with open eyes, you know, with using their intelligence when applying the principle of loyalty. Like sometimes the husband will say to the wife, you have to be chaste to me and do whatever I say, and then try to engage her in activities that are not in accordance with the Krishna consciousness. That's not loyalty. He's doing violence. He's not loyal. And her loyalty should be to pray for him that he can, you know, in other words, she's always his well-wisher. So if there's some break, I mean, practically, if there's some break in the marriage situation, not that she just dumps the guy, but she may separate. Like in the case of Sati, getting back to that story I told, the point was that she is now a widow. Widow means that he's dead, but she doesn't just, like, look for someone else at that particular point. Does everyone understand that? Widow. So we should be like that. I mean, I sometimes, even in my own life, I have disciples who turn on me for one reason or other. Yeah, it's life. Yeah, it's painful, but I still remain their well-wisher. It's not that I just say, I curse you. And I take some water like they do in the movies, you know, like that, or the water run, become a rakshasa, like that. No, I mean, that's the loyalty, that's the love. Like, the love for a mother is like, I'm talking about a mother's love, for that, you know, the son may become an absolute demon, but she still loves him. I mean, she's happy he's a demon. Just like my mother, I became an absolute Hare Krishna devotee, which she didn't like. But she still loved me, even though I was acting really crazy when I joined the Hare Krishna movement. I would go home, and I always bring a brahmachari with me to protect me from my mother. You know, you can't be alone with your mother. And then even when I talked to her, I just looked at her feet. She said, look at me in the eyes. I said, no. Can you imagine talking as though? Yes, mother? And then I always had my hand on my bead bag when I was talking with her. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And she still loved me in spite of all that. That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, phew, that's a mother. And I have a good mother. I mean, you can tell that to her. So, I mean, that's really what we need in society, those sort of loving relationships. What is that? Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace. Or like my son, you may crush me by your embrace and leave me broken. Anyway, so that's a mother's love. Prabhupada said that we have to be like a, I forget the exact quote, but he said we have to become like Bengali mothers. You know, because, you know, very loving like that. All of us have to be like that. You know, just like, anyway. So there's a lot we can learn from the mother situation. And as far as raising children, it requires a mother. That may come as a shock to all of you, but it does. I mean, if someone's going to raise children, they shouldn't be just working all the time. They should be home. When I was raised, well, my body was raised, so my mother was home, taking care of me. I mean, sometimes I didn't like it. I would pray to Krishna that she would go away. So when is she going to go away? Yeah, you know, oh my God. I want to have a party, you know. Invite all my friends around, tear apart the house, you know. But she was there. And that I attribute a lot of whatever stability I have, you know, and ability, a lot of the ability, you know, to control my senses and do everything, I attribute to having a good mother. I mean, seriously. I mean, of course, it's Prabhupada's mercy, Lord Chaitanya's mercy, but, you know, there's psychological factors at work, too, in each and every one of our lives. And I attribute it to that. So, Mother's Day. any other questions, you know? What a controversial class.
What if someone becomes asphyxiated with someone else? It's not both sides.
Asphyxiated? What?
Like being like obsessed with someone.
Well, that's not chastity. That means like
I'm trying to show I'm loyal.
You're more what?
I'm trying to show I'm loyal to that person, though that person doesn't want to deal with me, doesn't want to associate with me.
Well, that's obsessiveness, and that's attachment, and trying to use the person. You know, trying to manipulate the person with my loyalty. Yeah. I mean, that's a manipulative technique. So we have to be careful about that. We have to see what is our motivation. It has to be concerned for the person's welfare, spiritual and material welfare. Like with devotees, if a devotee gets sick, we should just like rush to the hospital to take care of that. Like we were mentioning that small group of ladies who meets, that, you know, one of them had to go to the hospital for an operation immediately. The other ones were bringing prasadam and what do you need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, like that. And that's the sort of loving society we need. That sort of loyalty, chastity to each other, and then that'll attract so many people. So many people will join. For example, many people join the Mormons because they have that established, isn't it? Because it's, I mean, even though their philosophy is really interesting, you know, I study their philosophy. You can become Lord Brahma. I basically didn't say Lord Brahma, but the head of the whole universe. Imagine if we preach that. You become Krishna conscious, you get your own universe, Prabhu, and your family gets to be there with you. You get to be Lord Brahma. I mean, when I heard that, I thought, that's a punishment. I mean, it's bad enough to be a temple president. It's not, he's an ecstatic temple president, but it's a lot of headache, isn't it? It's not just that everybody's offering obeisances to you, but can you imagine if you were temple president of the whole universe? Can you imagine that, Ananta? Would you like that job? The whole universe, and everyone's looking up to you in the whole universe, you know, and when Bhumi has trouble on the earth, she comes to you, and that's just the earth. You know, that's just a small part of the story. Every planet, there's a presiding deity, and they go to Lord Brahma to put their complaints in. And the poor guy, he has four heads, so he can have four headaches. Isn't it? And then some of them have like 1,000 headaches. And they have to take all, I don't know what they take for the headaches, but And you don't get a vacation. And then when you go to sleep, the whole universe gets destroyed, partially destroyed, and you got to rebuild it when you wake up in the morning. What a job. So anyway, that's the part of their philosophy. So, but people join anyway because there's, you know, loving relationships. They take care of each other, they send you to school, they arrange for your marital situation. You don't have to worry. So we should learn. We can learn from the setup of other organizations, you know, taking care of each other, a whole social structure like that. Of course, we have Varnashram, which helps us organize it a little bit better. And they preach like anything, too. I mean, they send their young people out preaching on missions all over the world, even to the country of Slovenia, the far-out country. Anyway, they have a whole ashram here, isn't it?
It was Mormon before.
Yeah, we had two. Petra was Mormon, too.
I wasn't really a member, but I was...
Associated, yeah. So, I mean, they have a whole ashram, and, you know, so we need to learn. You know, copy. What do they say? Copy success. It's not that everything everyone does is bad. That everyone's a demon and everything everyone does is bad. No, I mean, if some people do something good, you know, but that's then we have to see and appreciate it and copy it. That's one of the principles of business success, isn't it? Copy success. Don't reinvent the wheel. So, any other questions or comments? What?
I didn't understand actually what is obsession with someone or something and what's loyalty.
Well, obsession is like, I don't know, do you know who the Beatles are?
Yes.
Not the little buggies, you know.
Yeah.
The cockroaches, you know. Like, but the Beatles are, or were, because some of them are dead, they're a musical group. And in the 1960s and 60s mainly, there were a lot of girls who were obsessed with them. Obsessed means all day long. If you went into their rooms, there were pictures of Ringo and Paul and, you know, the rest of the guy. And they would go to their concerts. If you could see the movies, they'd be, ah, ah! There'd be thousands of ladies just like, that's like the Western way of what, la la la, you know what they do in Bengal? Like that. So they were obsessed with them, but it's not that they really loved them. They were just like thinking of them 24 hours a day, and they have to have guards on the Beatles all the time because the ladies would have pulled their bodies apart had they let them. Oh, I got Ringo's leg. They would have killed him. So that's obsession, you understand? So that doesn't mean that, that's not love and it's not loyalty. It's just, you know, you do something for me. You know, they turn them on, to use a hippie expression from the 1960s. Oh, Paul. Like that, you know, huh? And so, you know, we don't need blind followers in the Krishna conscious movement like that. We need people who are practical, level-headed. Oh, Guru Maharaj, I love you. Can you do this? No, I love you. I just want to be with you all day. Go out and preach. No. You understand? Cook an offering. No. I'm hungry. No. That's obsession. Krishna conscious obsession. You understand the word obsession now? It all, you know, it's also a psychological disease. Obsessive compulsiveness. So we shouldn't be like that.